Hello, everyone. This is Jim Lucy, Editor-in-Chief for Electrical Wholesale and Electrical Marketing, with episode number 92 of today's The Electrical Economy Podcast, very sponsored by Champion Fiberglass. Champion began producing epoxy fiberglass conduit and fittings in 1988, and in 1990 developed the first conduit from epoxy resins that had flame resistance and low smoke characteristics. This met the most stringent codes and specifications. Today's podcast will look at the latest electrical pricing trends from Electrical Marketing's Electrical Price Index. We'll take a look at some very large distributor acquisitions that happened over the past couple weeks, and I'll give you some ideas on my attendance about what I learned at the Legication Lighting Show last week in New York. The podcast will also provide updates for five key weekly economic indicators: initial unemployment claims at the state level, rail freight car traffic, the Baker Hughes rig count, oil prices, and copper prices. Our thanks again to Champion Fiberglass for sponsoring today's The Electrical Economy Podcast Series for 2024. For the week ending March the 16th, the advanced figure for seasonally adjusted initial unemployment claims was 210,000. That's a decrease of 2,000 from the previous week's revised level. The four-week moving average is 211,250. That's an increase of 2,500 from the previous week's revised level. The U.S. unemployment rate is currently at 3.9%. At the state level, we had two fairly significant drops in unemployment claims in California and Oregon. California saw its claims drop for the week, 5,369, now sitting at 41,853. State of Oregon had a drop of 2,580. They're now at 2,436 for the weekend, March the 16th. Comparatively, Texas, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey also had some bigger decreases. Texas was down 972 claims. That's down to 14,654. Pennsylvania saw its decline of 767, now sitting at 9,776. And New Jersey down 750, now sitting at 8,370. Only two states had claims for the week of over 1,000, Missouri and Michigan. Missouri was up to 4,065, had a claims increase of 1,369, and the state of Michigan was up 1,183, claims now sitting at 6,951. Well under 1,000, but still among the leaders over in the most recent data. Tennessee up 559, Mississippi up 293, Nebraska up 249 claims, Arkansas up 206 claims, and Iowa up 202 claims. An interesting leading indicator that will give you a sense of the overall U.S. economy's freight rail traffic is a measure of the amount of raw materials and finished goods being shipped by rail. The best source for this data is the American Association of Railroads, or AAR. It publishes this data weekly at www.aar.org. For the week, total U.S. weekly rail traffic saw a pretty nice increase of 6.7% compared to this time last year. Rail traffic now at 474,596 carloads and intermodal units. When you look at the first 11 weeks of 2024, we also saw a modest increase, up 2.5% compared to last year, now sitting at 5.1 million carloads and intermodal units. The weekly average is sitting right now over the past year at 473,000 approximately. When you look at the specific freight type of categories, we saw some fairly significant swings to the green side. And if you look at total intermodal units, at up 9%, up chemicals up 4.4%, petroleum and petroleum products up 7.1%, and we had we already mentioned the chemicals total traffic up 2.5%. Lagging right now, coal down 12.7% through the most recent week compared to last year. Non-metallic minerals down 10.3%. We had total carloads down 4.1% and grain down 2.4%. If you track the oil market, you're probably familiar with the Baker Hughes rig count. This tracks the oil and gas rigs that are operating. The data is available by state, by basin, and nationally at www.rigcount.bakerhughes.com. This slide gives you an idea of the largest oil and gas deposits. It gives you a good sense of just how many of the large oil plays are in Texas and Oklahoma, and how big of the area is the Marcellus gas region, which covers parts of Pennsylvania in the west, Ohio in its eastern portion, and parts of West Virginia. So far this year, we really haven't seen any major uptick in oil and gas rig activities as far as new rigs coming online. And in fact, for the past week, we saw a fairly sizable decrease of five fewer oil and gas rigs. We're now 134 rigs behind last year's pace, and that's a 17.7% overall change. We're now sitting at 624 rigs. Responsible for a good chunk of the big weekly change was the state of Louisiana, and that would be specifically in their Haynesville area, down four rigs, down down by numbers, down 14 over from last year by percent. Louisiana down is down 24.1%. The nation's largest area, Permian, which accounts for 315 rigs, and it's almost half of the U.S. total there, just down by one, but it is down 38 rigs from last year, down 10.8% on a percent basis. The Eagle Ford, second biggest operating area right now, that's also in Texas and in parts of New Mexico, I believe. It is down 15 rigs for about 21% decline. On a year-to-date basis, oil hasn't made any really big moves in recent weeks or in recent months. It's, as of March 22nd, it's currently sitting at $81.01 per barrel, slightly down from its yearly high when it hit about right around 83. It started the year right around say $70 a barrel. So no big change. It's one-year average price, $77.50. So it is sitting a little bit above the annual average right now. Economists like to call copper pricing Dr. Coffee because it's a leading economic indicator for future activity, since copper is used in so many industries. The construction industry is among the leading markets for copper because of its use in wire and cable and copper plumbing pipe. Copper pricing hit a landmark of sorts on the COMEX earlier this month when it topped the $4 mark on March the 13th. Still above that right now, and it's sitting right about just above the $4 market right now. So we'll see if it can maintain that. The one-year average right now for COMEX price is $3.82. We're pretty strongly above that. So and that $4 mark is one thing people look at. Very long term, folks do expect copper to rise in large part because of all the copper that's going to expected to be needed for electrical vehicles, their charging stations, and also the revitalization of the U.S. electrical rig. So that'll be interesting to see. Long-term, bigger, you know, that definitely we could see copper tracking and staying above, probably well above $4. But short-term, it'll probably be chugging along up and down as it has been. So I don't see any immediate changes, any immediate drastic changes. But you know, over the long term, I think you can definitely expect to see it sticking above the $4 mark. That's just my guess. Now let's take a look at some of the electrical pricing trends that we pulled together with our friends over at Standard & Poor's Global for the Electrical Price Index. And we take a look at over 20 product categories there on a monthly basis. You can get this information as part of a $99 annual subscription to Electrical Marketing Newsletter. Yeah, as I mentioned, we collect information on more than 20 electrical product categories, but it just will give you some ideas on which products were moving the most for the month of February. Total index for the month, just up a fraction of a percent, 0.1. The historical monthly average is a 0.22 increase. If you look at the year-over-year change, it was down 0.7. It is generally tracking on a year-over-year basis annually, 2.73%. And these averages go way back to our data, back in the mid-90s. First, let's take a look at that chart on the left, monthly data. Leading increases up by transformers, 1.7%. Boxes up 1.2%. Switchgear, 0.9%. Industrial fixtures, 0.7%. You know, look at some of the larger product categories. Circuit breakers down 2.1%. Appliances down 9%. Power wire and cable, 0.3%. Looking over on the chart on the right to take a look at the changes in the specific product categories year over year. As we mentioned, it was down for the month of February, 0.7%. Power wire and cable up 12.5%. Switchgear, look at that, 8.3%. In addition to all the problems with the shipping delays and all, you can see it's also seen some pretty big increases there. Transformers also up 6%. So it's transformers near the top in both the monthly and year over year changes. Fuses also up 6.7%. Again, panel boards and switches up 5.7%. Ballast up 5.2%. Industrial controls 5.1%. Circuit breakers 5.1, and on the other end of the spectrum, on the year-over-year change, pole line hardware down the most, 13.5%. Boxes up, down 13.4%. Conduit fittings down 8.5%, and non-metallic conduit down 6.5%. Let's shift our focus from economic indicators and product pricing trends to some very large distributor acquisitions that breaking over the past couple of weeks. In the past month, we've had five major electrical distributors being acquired. Let's take a look at each of these deals. At the top of our chart here, we have the news that Graybar acquired Blazer Electric Supply in Colorado. We also had Border States acquired Dominion Electric Supply in Arlington, Virginia. Solar Power acquired Michigan's Madison Electric and Standard Electric in Michigan. And earlier this month, CED buying Parish Electric Supply in Texas. All of these companies have been ranked on EW's top 150 listing over the years. But the Blazer Electric deal sticks out to me for several reasons. The Blazer's branches are in Colorado's Front Range, one of the nation's fastest growing electrical markets over the past decade or so. It's also interesting to note that it's actually the second time Steve and Mike Blazer and their family sold their company. The Blazer family sold their electrical distributorship in 1999 to Westburn, which was acquired by shortly after that acquisition to Rexel. And 10 years later, they started up Blazer 2.0 in 2009. Electrical Wholesaling did a cover story on the startup of the Blazer 2.0 very shortly after they had made the news broke that they were going to be back in business. We did a cover story in January of 2010. The Sonepar's acquisition are big because of the large footprint they give the company in Michigan. And it's as a market that, by their estimation, is the 10th largest on the state level market in the entire country. Border States purchased of Dominion Electric is a big deal because it puts them in the Mid-Atlantic region for the very first time. And CED, they don't really publicize a whole lot about their acquisition activity, but boy, when they bought Parish here, the company had a number of branches in Dallas, and that is by any measure one of the fastest growing electrical markets. So a couple of very significant deals. Best of congratulations to both the acquiring companies and to the families that sold these businesses. The Sonepar acquisition news broke while I was in New York for the Education Lighting Show. And for those of you who haven't attended the show, I got to tell you, it's unlike any trade show I've been to recently or probably in many years. And that's because you got 10,000 people that would be a number of people you'd see in a large conference center or a trade show hall. But those 10,000 folks are jammed into four relatively small exhibition halls at the New York Hilton. But because of the just crazy amount of energy at the show, and man, part of that's the crowds. I mean, you're elbow to elbow with folks for sure. But there's a lot of interesting new technology and lighting there. There's also all kinds of network opportunities. And I think I ran into as many people from the electrical circuit out in the aisles of the show as I did in the booths of the show. So it's high-level energy, interesting new products. And if you come anywhere near to the lighting market, you probably would enjoy checking Education out for a day. Also, this guy, I think, has got a very solid educational component there. So I'll give you some more specific takeaways in the next slide. Yeah, as I mentioned, there's estimated to be over 10,000 attendees. There were 475 exhibitors and 40-plus seminars. They also have a virtual seminar component. I haven't gotten the final numbers of how many people attended those other virtual seminars. The main thing with the show is really it started out as a local lighting show, the local lighting designers and rep firms putting this on in New York. It has evolved into a national show at this point. And people like that smaller format. And part of the reason there too, the Lightfoot trade show, which for many years was probably in our part of the lighting world, the largest of the national shows, has been doing some restructuring, and it won't. They're not having a show this year. It'll be back in 2025. They've got some new ownership, but it's a large format show, which works, for many folks that want to make a real big splash with a real big booth. But for a smaller format footprint type of show, people are really resonating, with what's going on at Education. Exhibitors like the smaller booth size and their ability to focus on a couple of the top products in that. As I was walking the aisles of the show for a day and a half or so, two of the big product trends that stuck out to me, at least, was the miniaturization of downlights and track lighting and the growing popularity of tape lights. Every time you see the show, some of these that downlights, track lights, with the track lights, just a side note too, some very interesting products there. They attach magnetically to a track on the ceiling. In the case of the Edison Price and WAC lighting products, I particularly stuck out. And they have all different types of fixture heads, but these little beams, they're not much more than the size of a 50-cent piece, inch and a half maybe diameter, and they pack a punch. I mean, it's as much or better, quite possibly better lighting, better LED lighting than what you used to be able to get in a conventional incandescent par light, not all that many years ago. I mentioned the tape light. There was so many different companies are making making tape lights. I had no idea there was so many people out there making it, but if people do like it. You can customize it to, you know, many different lengths, and you can wrap around things in different shapes. You can really kind of create your own shapes with it. Some people are putting it in tubes. There's all different types of things, but the tape lighting was on the show floor in a very big way. So yeah, if you've been meaning to get to New York for the show, you can cover a lot of it the first day, particularly, you can cover an awful lot of the booths in one day. But 2 days will give you a little extra time. But if you want to just immerse yourself in lighting for a day, in a couple of the seminars, I'd recommend that as well. I'd spend 2 days, and I think you'll find it be time well spent. Well, that wraps up our podcast today. I realize we're a little bit longer than I normally go, but with the news breaking and all the acquisitions and my trip to Light Fair and our electrical pricing news, I thought it would be a worthwhile listen for you. And thanks again to the folks from Champion Fiberglass for sponsoring today's podcast, as well as our entire series for 2024. And as always, just a reminder, if you any of the information you'd like some more further details on that we were within the podcast today, or need some information on subscribing to Electrical Marketing or any of our other products, please write me an email at jlucy@endeavorb2b.com or give me a ring, 913-461-7679. Our next presentation will be on April 8th. If you're a baseball fan, you'll probably have had an opening day at your stadium, and I know I'm going to be heading out to the Kansas City Royals Kauffman Stadium with two of my sons and another friend coming up on Thursday. So, again, it's a fun time of year between that and Final Four, March Madness. Hope your bracket isn't too badly busted. So, until April the 8th, be healthy, be happy. Look forward to chatting with you then.